So today we're reading Bamidbar chapter 22. As we've seen yesterday, this chapter, I think, starts in the wrong place. It starts a pasuk where it should have really started. The previous pasuk was about the travel of the Bnei Israel to Arvis Moav. And now we have the real place where this chapter should have started, with like the Parshas Bullock starts, is that now we have this full story of what happened when they were in Arvis Moav, the non-war that happened with Moav. So there's a very interesting story, very much known both in the Torah itself, as a famous story in Tanakh, the story of Balak, the king of Moav, hiring Bilam, the sorcerer, the prophet, the person that knows how to curse and bless. That's definitely something that he knew. And to curse the Jewish people, and his curse is not working out, but instead him giving blessings or praises of the people. Now, this story is very, very weird. Many people have, firstly, it goes through the next two chapters. So again, whoever split the chapters for whichever reason decided to split it in this place. I'm not really sure why. It goes through the next, three chapters until chapter 24. It's one long story. If you were to cut it up, it might be better places to cut it up than where the chapters cut them up. But in any case, you must have said, well, it's too long. You should have to cut it somewhere. But there's a very famous question that everyone asks when they read this story, which is, why is this interesting? Like some person, some guy, some Balak wanted to curse us and hired Bilam. Turned out he couldn't curse us. Like, it seems to be giving too much attention to something totally minor and unimportant. And there's various explanations for this, but I think the most simple explanation, or the most simple reading of this in this context where we are, is, I remember, as is seen very explicitly in Sefer Dvarim, where Moshe repeats all his conquests, all his wars that he won, all the battles that he won, called Sicha in Oig, Amodi, Sicha Melech Amodi, Oig Melech HaBashan, in some sense Moav, all these three main places that they passed now on their way, right, on the third leg of the story of the book, when they're on the threshold of the land of Israel. So it seems like Moav is a very important question. What happens to them? Are they happy with us? Are they not happy? Do they agree with us? Are they letting us? Are they fighting with us? Midian, Moav, these people, they might be connected, as we'll see. They're Zikne Midian or somehow here. In any case, these people seem to be very important. And it seems to me that the main point of this story, as it starts, Vayogar Moav mipnei ha'om ma'od, Moav was very afraid from the people, from the army, from the Moshe and his people. And that has already been mentioned in Shir HaSeyam. Remember the great, the greatest, or the fullest, right? The fullest epic poem recorded in the Torah is the Shir HaSeyam. As we've discussed, Shefa Shemois has, in a certain way, the more complete, or the more, we could say, like, well-edited version of the first part of the story, right? The story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. The last part here, we see, gets into all these fragmentations and questionable things that we don't understand entirely. But in Shefa Shemois, the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim completed with the great song, the great epic poem of Tzias Mitzrayim, of Shir HaSeyam, known as Shir HaSeyam. It's really broader than Shir HaSeyam, right? It really talks about the conquest of the people all the way until they get to Eretz Yisrael, until they build the Beis HaMikdash. And Moav figures prominently there. These are the three people, or two of them are we just mentioned. Edom being afraid, Moav being afraid, and then Canaan, which we didn't get to yet in this version of the story. We had the Kanani Melech Arad, but he obviously wasn't afraid, but he was routed, so might be why they're starting to be afraid. So this seems to be very important. It seems to be important to the Torah to tell us that all the people in our way were really very afraid of us. And this is probably also to raise the morale of the people themselves. Moshe, as we've seen in the end of yesterday's chapter, was afraid. Hashem tells him, "Al tira," I said, "Don't be afraid of Oik." Obviously, he was afraid. These were powerful kings. These were people with a lot of power. So, a big part of the story is to say that they do not have power. And in other words, their spirit was broken even before. There might have been some fight later. There was a fight with Bilam, with Midian. There was an actual matter, but this important story of Bilam. Bilam and Balak trying to curse, which is whatever the meaning of a curse, it obviously expresses a kind of moral or narrative power that they have over us. They could curse us. And the important message of this story is that, no, they were afraid. Even Bilam was afraid or saw the great power and the great success of the people, and therefore, instead of cursing, he blessed. So that's, I think, the most general and most story that makes the most sense of this story in the context. Now we will read the story. As we'll see, it's a very structured story. We go through it. I've cut it up into these parts, the part of Balak trying to hire Balak. Balak trying to hire Bilam. Bilam's interesting side story on the way to Balak, to the location, to the Arvus Moav, where he wants to curse the people, and the entire progress of Bilam with the people, where he gets, and he says three, and then fourth, different mashal, different prophecies about the people and about all the nations in between. So those are the main three parts. That's how I would divide this story into three parts. The chapters didn't divide them in the exact place where I would, but that's how I would have divided it. And each one of these internally is also divided somewhat into three or two. There's always these doublets and triplets in the stories. Everything happens three times, or there's a progression of threes or twos or fours in the story. There's always a progression how the same kind of thing started. So it's a story very, very, could say, very well constructed. I shouldn't say that about the Torah. Some stories are more well constructed and some less, but more explicitly, more clearly built out, unlike the previous stories where we had like very slight parts. And we can imagine that there's some story with this Be'er and so on, which has this whole thing, because this is also a story that has a lot of poetry in it, right? A lot of mashalim, a lot of music. But here we have the full story, the entire narrative, and with many details, with many steps in each part of the story, it has a very clear, like, logical progress. So the first story, this is sort of the background. The first part gives us the background, tells us that Balak ben Tzippai, Balak, the son of Tzippai, this is his name, sees. And as a note, as the sort of like editorial or narrator's note at the end of this chart says, Balak is the king of Moav at that time. So that's who. We didn't know. It's the story sort of just says Balak ben Tzippai. We're supposed to know. So it sort of like gives us information at the end. This is the style of the Torah many times. Give us like historical information, the background information in a sort of a side note in the end. So Balak ben Tzippai sees what Israel did to Amor, in other words, to Sichon, mostly. Sichon, remember, from the previous poetry, in the previous chapter, Sichon had there was a famous poem about Sichon being even more powerful than Moav, right? Oylecha Moav, Avadam, Kemoish, Boich, Heshbon, Tibonev, Sichon, and Sichon, and so on. And now Sichon was destroyed by the people, by the Israel. So, Mikal v'chomer, obviously, Moav should be afraid. So Moav is very afraid, because they're great, Kiravu, because they're great, because they're many, because they're strong, and they're cuts, they're, I don't know how to exactly translate this word, something like disgusted, but I don't think that's a very good translation. This means something like very scared. I see someone translated very distressed. Of course, this echoes also Pare. Pare had the same kind of fear. Vayakutsum of Nebnei Yisrael, the beginning of Sefer Shemois, and also for the same reason, Kiravu, because there were many of them. So this is like Moav, the great repetition of the fears and threats of the people, that there are many of them. There's a demographic threat, and they're obviously not only demographic, they're also militarily strong. So Moav and tells Zikne Midian, and there's some question here, what is Zikne Midian doing here? But as we'll see later, Midian seems to have definitely been connected to this story, so something is going on here. He tells them, and here also there's a poetic, already a poetic image, a poetic metaphor. He says, this people, this community, this great mass, we could translate it, will eat or destroy the vegetation all around us as a axe destroys the green of the field. So axe goes, eats, and eats everything. He's very hungry. And this day, he's imagining the people as some kind of big, great herd of oxen coming and destroying it. Nothing green is left. It all becomes brown and destroyed. So that's the setting the stage, similarly to how we had in the beginning of Sefer Shemos. There's the nation, they're becoming great, they're becoming many, they're becoming powerful, and there's Vayemer El Amo, there's the like quote of what the people are saying, why they're afraid. So now he seems to have a plan. So his plan was, as I said, the first part of the story is, he's going to send messengers to Bilam ben Boir, who lives at the river, probably Pesoir, the river Peras, or Pesoir might be a play on word of Peras, now I'm thinking Pesoir, Paras, in any case, or a place called Pesoir, and where he lives, Eretz Pnei Amor. There's some difficulty with these words. In any case, he sends messengers all the way to Bilam. Bilam is a famous sorcerer, a famous poet, a famous prophet. He calls him, and he gives them this message. He gives them also a poetic message, or a message written in a high register. Tells them what has happened, what is going on. He tells them there's this nation, people went out of Egypt, they've covered the color or the light of the ground, and they're right here, they're sitting next to me, across from me. So again, there's the same image of like the earth being covered, earlier the earth being eaten, like the axe eats the grass. And therefore, va'ato in the Torah always means something like, and therefore. Doesn't mean and now. I mean, literally means and now, but not like it's not about a chronological time. It's dealing like, and therefore, come and curse for me these people because they're stronger. If you'll curse them, we'll be able to strike them and banish them from the earth. And why am I asking you to curse? Because I know that who you bless is blessed, who you curse is cursed. This is, of course, the language that we have of Avraham Avinu. Very similar our language. This is why Chazal thought that Bilam was a kind of corresponding, right, the opposite of Avraham Avinu. In any case, this is, we know, so this is, concludes with this praise of Bilam. We know that your blessings and your curses work, so therefore I have this threat, please come help us. And they go, the Ziknei Moav, the elders of Moav and of Midian, go with Ksamim, with some kind of magical implements or they have, and they go to Bilam and they give him this message. This is the first time that you're going. And Bilam answers them, well, you have to stay here overnight, and I will respond to you as Hashem, as Yudke Vavke speaks to me. So he's saying, well, my whole thing is that I speak with Hashem, so I can't just answer you. You'll stay here overnight, and I'll tell you what Hashem says. And they do that. Now Elohim, interesting, Bilam says Hashem, Yudke Vavke, and then Elohim comes, according to the Torah, Elohim comes to Bilam at night. And he asks him, and as God acts in the Torah, he always starts off with small talk, asks people questions, although probably he knows everything, but there's this way of him starting a conversation, says, who are these people? And Bilam answers, he says, oh, Balak ben Zippor, the king of Moab, send them to me. And he repeats to him the message that he told them, there's this nation, he's covered the land, covered the color or the shine of the land, and he asks him to curse him, maybe I'll be able to fight with him and banish him from the land. He changes the verb from Oda to Kuva, but apparently that means the same thing. Now, what does Elohim answer? Elohim, don't go. Don't go with them. Don't curse the people. They're blessed people. Basically, I blessed them. But they're blessed people. It's not going to go. So he got this refusal. So he wakes up in the free, tells Balak's ministers, Balak's messengers, Balak's princes, tells them, go back to where you came from. Go back to your land, because Hashem refuses to let me go with you. And therefore, that's what they do. They go back to Moav, and they tell Balak, Bilam refuses to come with us. It's very interesting that, again, consistently, Bilam talks about Hashem. The pasuk doesn't talk about Hashem. Yudke Vavke is talking to him. And also, there's little change. The ministers of Moav come and say, Bilam doesn't want to go with us. Bilam told him, Hashem doesn't let me go with us, refuses to let me, and they understood that this is him. So therefore, we have the second messenger. Again, Bilak isn't impressed by this refusal. He realizes that maybe Bilam needs to be begged more, so he sends even more honorable, even more dignified Sodom, even more dignified princes, and more of them, and they come and they respond to his refusal. They say, in the name of Balak ben Zippor, this is what he says, do not refuse, do not hold yourself back from coming to me, I'll give you great honor, anything you ask me, I'll give you, anything you tell me, and just come and curse me these people. And Bilam responds, because he didn't say that it's him refusing, he said that Hashem is refusing. So he said, look, Balak can give me his whole house full of silver and gold, I will not be able to go against the word of Hashem. Hashem, my God. So very important, Hashem, my God. He claims Hashem to be his God, the one who speaks to him. I can't do a big thing, I can't do anything. But, therefore, the answer should be refusal. But he understands that, just like Balak understands that if Bilam refuses, he could ask him again. Bilam understands that if Hashem refuses, he could ask him again. So he says, look, stay here again another night, and I'll see what Hashem will add. Maybe he will give me some new message. And now, again, Elohim comes to Bilam at night and tells him, changes a new message, a new answer. It says, if these people came to call you, go with them. So here Hashem already knows. He didn't ask him, who are these people? He says, oh, these are the people that came to call you, go. But it's not that you're going to be able to do whatever you want. You're going to have to do the thing that I speak to you. So that's the second version, the second, Vayosef Hashem Daber and Bilam, the second thing he speaks to him. And Bilam wakes up in the morning and takes along his donkey, his female donkey, his assign, and goes with them. So that's what I said. There's the double part. There's twice they sent him, and the second time he agreed and Hashem agreed, but with this condition that he will only be able to say what he spoke, and he goes with them. Now there's a very interesting long story of what happens on the way. Now, Vayichar af Elohim ke'alech Hashem Elohim is angry that he's going. So although he gave him permission, obviously what we see here, and I think that's the simple reading, not everything, sometimes, you know, like your child asks you something five times, and, you know, and you say, okay, do it. It doesn't mean that he really wanted to do that. In the same way, Hashem said, okay, they want to call you, go with them, but it doesn't mean he really wanted. And he's upset, and a messenger of Hashem, so here we have Yitzkevavkei, comes on the way, lesotan lai, to be a, sotan is in the Torah a verb, not a noun, not a name of something, lesotan, to be someone that bothers him, to be someone that stops him. That's, sotan means something like being against, to be against him. Now Bilam is riding on his asan with his two servants. The asan now sees the malach standing in the way with his sword stretched out in his hand. So the Asin has some kind of vision. Of course, famous question, what does this mean even? But the Asin sees the Malach, and this Malach obviously is some kind of miraculous vision, some kind of things that you could see, but Bilam didn't see at first, and the Asin saw it. And it therefore goes off the way and goes into the field. Now Bilam doesn't see the Malach, so just sees his Asin, it's going to go off the way, and he hits it to get it back. Now the Malach, so again, we have this three-time structure. The second time, the Malach goes in the way between two vineyards. So this is interesting because this also connects very much with the stories that we've discussed earlier with the request that the Nisrael had to Edom and then to Moav, sorry, and then to Sichon, that they would go in the right way. They're not going to go in the fields. And here, Bilam is sort of being forced to go into the fields or into the vineyards by this Asin. I don't know what the connection is, but I'm noticing. But now he goes in this like kind of way. So there's different ways. There's a way that's, you know, between open fields. But now there's a way between two vineyards. And these both vineyards apparently have two fences or gedorim. Gedorim is a fence of stone usually between. And therefore, there's not a lot of place to move to the side. So the Osan sees again the Malach. So she pushes herself into the wall. And Bilam, who's riding on it, his foot, who's on the side of the Osan, is getting squashed into the wall. So he hits it again. But, okay, there's still sort of like she passed by the Malach. That's basically what happened. Although there was a small space, she passed by. Third time, the Malach comes, and he stands in a place where there's nowhere to move anywhere at all. It's an even more narrow path. There's nowhere to go right or left. Interesting language, right? This is language in Sefer Dvarim a lot. Don't go away from the way of the Torah, right or left. And the Asan sees the Malach third time. So what does she do? She doesn't continue. She just sits down, and she refuses to move. And now Bilam is upset. Ve'yicharaf Bilam. Started off the story with Ve'yicharaf Elohim. Now Ve'yicharaf Bilam, and he hits the Asan. So what's going on with you? Now suddenly now, at this stage, Ve'yiftach Hashem es pi Asan. Hashem opens the mouth of the Asan. Again, something very weird, very interesting. And the Asan speaks to Bilam. Oh, what happened here? And the Asan tells Bilam, why do you hit me? Three times. And Bilam says, what do you mean? You're making fun of me. If I'd have had a sword, I would have killed you. Of course, remember, the Malach is the one that's standing with a sword. And the Asan is thinking, like, you have a sword. You might be talking about a sword, but that guy had a sword. And the Asan answers Bilam. He says, well, I'm your Asan. You've ridden on me from always until this day. Have I ever done something like this to you? In other words, it's saying, like, when you see someone, Asan, suddenly misbehaving, it's suddenly not cooperating, so you should think, like, maybe there's something wrong. It's not like, you know, like, we have a short meat, right? We know that this animal doesn't listen. This is a good animal. It's been serving him well all his times. So he says no. So in other words, lesson one, Bilam. Very interesting story. Bilam, the great, right? The great man of words. He knows how to have words and things for everything. Here, his donkey has won a debate with him, a conversation with him. Okay. And now, Hashem opens Bilam's eyes. So first he opened the Asan's mouth, now he opens Bilam's eyes, and he sees the Malach with his sword. So now Bilam obviously understands what's going on. And what you do when you see a Malach is, you bow down to him. And the Malach tells Bilam, why do you hit your Asan three times? He says, it was me. I've come about here, l'satan, to be something that stands in your way. Because this way is against me. I think that's what it means. Something like that. You're going against my will. So he's speaking in the name of Hashem here. You're going against Hashem's will, and I've come in some way to stop you. And the Asin saw, so at least she went on the side from me. Therefore, maybe she went from me. Ilai Natsim Pana. She was right. You're the one that's wrong. Ki'ata. Now that you see that was me, then she was respecting me in some sense, going on the side. I should have killed you and let her live. In other words, you're saying that she should be killed for not going the way you should be killed, because you're going against my will. You're going against the Malach. She's at least respecting the Malach. And what does Bilam say? Sorry, I've sinned. I didn't know that you're the one standing against me in the way. And of course, he understands that this Malach is a messenger of Hashem. He's not apologizing to the Malach for trying to go through him. He's apologizing to Hashem, who have sent the Malach, and now he understands that Hashem doesn't want him to go. And he tells him, therefore, Ra'ata, if this is bad in your eyes, let me go back. I'm going to return home. And what does the Malach Hashem say? No, no problem. You don't have to go back home. You can stay here. You can continue on your way. But again, only the thing that I've spoken to you, that's what you will speak. And Bilam continues on his way. So this is a very interesting story. So if he does want, then why did he send the Malach to stop him? Something very weird. And I can't give a solution for this, but I think it's this part of the story is to show or to emphasize how strongly Bilam does want to go. So don't think that Bilam was just going to give up. He does want to go. And he is forced. He's sort of being played with. Like Bilam said, Lewis allowed people. Bilam is the one being played with and becoming just a tool in the hands of this Malach, in the hands of Hashem. Okay, so that's where I would stop the chapter. I'm going to continue a little bit. So we see the beginning of him coming to Bilam, and we'll stop more or less with the step of the chapter. So we'll have to start this again tomorrow because this is really weird stuff. So Bullock hears that Bilam came, that messengers must have went ahead and told him Bilam is on the way, and he goes to meet him in the city called Moav, next to the Arna and Ashbekza Gvil, in this river called Arna, which we've discussed. Arna was the border of Moav and Ammon. And now Bullock again has Tanis, not happy with Bilam, and he speaks to him. He tells him, I've sent for you many times. Why didn't you come? Is it because I cannot respect you? I cannot honor you? And Bilam answers it, look, I come. So firstly, like, why are you telling me you can't come? I didn't want to come, I came. But now, does that mean that I can speak anything? I can't speak anything. Whatever Elohim, Hashem, a God, will put in my mouth, that's what I will speak. So he's sort of answering the two things. It's not you that can't respect me enough, that can't honor me enough. Is that I can't come? It's Hashem who is controlling me. I will only speak what he gives me in his mouth. So they come to a place called Kiryas Chutzos. Bullock slaughters Bukar Vetzoin, sheep and from the earth, the herd, Bukar, and sends Bilam food, so they make a sort of a party. And in the morning, so that was the first meeting. So let's stop here. Then this is the first meeting. So there's like the stage. Bilam comes to Bullock, and there's the first stage of the meeting where they have a sort of a small argument, but they reconcile. They make a little party. And then we're going to have the next, again, three times where each time Bilam asks Bullock to slaughter, not a party for himself, but for Hashem, for a korban. And each time, according to that, tries to prophesize. And then we have what happens.